Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, February 28, 2022. The head of the National Bureau of Statistics says his office is not ready to carry out population census within 60 days after the end of the transitional period.
For census to be undertaken, it is not the bureau to decide. It is the political leadership to direct.
And the police in Jonglei State say two teenagers were killed by an explosive device in Bor Town over the weekend.
On the 26th of February, there was a terrible incident that occurred in Lambasi, in which the grenade explosion occurred, killing two teenagers on spot and wounding four others.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The head of the National Bureau of Statistics in South Sudan says his agency needs at least 24 months to carry out a population census ahead of a national election. Isaiah Chola Roy says the bureau has not received any orders from the political leaders to conduct census in preparation for the upcoming elections in 2023. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Isaiah Chol Arai, chairperson of the National Bureau of Statistics, says he does not know if elections will be held with or without an updated census, but he says the bureau is still waiting for orders from the country's leaders.
For census to be undertaken, it is not the bureau to decide. It is the political leadership to direct the bureau to conduct a census. So up to now, we do not have such orders. Depending on the timeline, because it's not possible to do it, but you need to have sufficient time to conduct a census. So that will depend very much on the instructions or orders as to when to do it.
Arai says with new technologies available, the agency have reduced a significant amount of paperwork previously involved in undertaking a census. Nevertheless, Arai says the bureau still needs 3 years to carry out a quality census.
So if you go to the issue of tablets and so on, and then the timing, the minimum would be 24 months, not less than that. But it can go as much as 3 years. Because when you map the country, what we call the cartographic work, by itself, it's supposed to take 1 year alone, and that is the most difficult part of it. And it also depends on the availability of resources, meaning funds. Money must be readily available for you to undertake a census, because the activities are so interlinked. So you finish with this activity, then you move to the next one. Like, for instance, you do the mapping. After the mapping, that is where you now talk of enumeration, that is the actual count. But in between, if there is a space where you do not have the money, then it becomes difficult.
Arai says if the government directs his agency to conduct a census within 12 months, that will be impossible. He says the National Bureau of Statistics is facing funding challenges, which he says has forced many agency employees to look for other work.
The budget we get from the government is inadequate. It doesn't cover. It only covers the salaries and a limited operating cost, and it doesn't come on a regular basis. A general problem, like, for instance, the whole government was, civil servants were paid last year in October, up to date. Nobody is paid. So how do you keep people to work? So you'll find that the people are not coming to work because they have no means to come to the office. The issue of also, which is a general problem, is not pertaining to us. The issue of access. There are areas that are difficult to access either because of environmental factors like flooding or issues to do with insecurity.
Arai also says the institution has an unpublished projected statistics of the country's population, which the government could use during the elections if necessary. RICE is based on the census conducted in 2008. The Bureau has been making population projections and that South Sudan now has a population of 13 million plus. It says the Bureau conducted a population survey estimate in May of last year, but the results have not been released as the Bureau has run short on funding. It says as the national elections draw closer, it is up to the government to use the data from the most recent estimated population survey if a new census is not conducted.
That figure is not necessary, or the exercise is not intended for elections. But if the political leadership decides to use figures, that would be up to them. But technically, we were not done because of elections. It was done because we need our people to be served with humanitarian assistance. We must know where the people are. We need to come up with policies, women, children, and so on. So we did not do it because of elections. We did it because we want to provide statistics to the government for planning or for policy formulation.
According to the 2018 revitalized peace agreement signed by the political parties, South Sudan is supposed to hold elections in February 2023. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Authorities in Jonglei State say they have launched an investigation into an incident in which a grenade explosion killed two teenagers and injured four other people in Bor Town over the weekend. The spokesperson for the South Sudan Police Service in Jonglei State says members of various armed groups present in the state should not keep explosive devices at home. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Jonglei State Police spokesperson Major Majang Daniel Tuor says about a dozen young people had gathered for lunch in Bor Town when a hand grenade exploded, killing two people and injuring several others on Saturday.
On the 26th of February, there was a terrible incident that occurred in Lambasi, in which the grenade explosion occurred, killing two teenagers on spot and wounding four others. And we, the police within the state, do condemn that bad incident, and we are together in deep sorrow with the families of the deceased and those who are still in the hospital.
Major Tuor says the injured are children between 14 and 17 years old. He says the injured are being treated at Bor State Hospital. Dr. Bol Chow, medical director at Bor State Hospital, says the injured teenagers are all in stable condition.
They were all brought to the hospital. We attended to them. The three were admitted. One had shrapnel injuries to the chest and with eye injuries. That one was referred to Juba and left yesterday. The other two are currently in the hospital nursing their injuries.
Major Tuor says police are investigating the blast to establish the owner of the hand grenade and why he or she stored it at home.
The police is still carrying out actually where the teenagers got the grenade, whether it belonged to one of the residents within the area or they found it in the area where it was being cleared by the land authority. That is what the state police is still investigating. And when the investigation is complete, we shall let the public be aware of exactly where the teenagers got the grenade.
Major Tuor says members of the armed forces should never keep explosive devices at home.
Our constant advice regarding such dangerous weapon is that you should keep them such kind of weapon like grenades, the rifles, and other sharp weapons should be kept away, far away from such people like children, even the civilian population, even if they are already grown up, because they are not aware about their use and how they should be disposed or how they should be kept. That is what I will tell the public exactly.
At least two people were killed and dozens of others were injured when a grenade exploded at a party in a Will West County of Northern Barrel Ghazali State last month. A 13-year-old boy was killed and his two sisters were injured after a grenade exploded in Nyamlele area of Will West County in February last year. Their father, a military officer, reportedly left the grenade in a bag and his children mistook it for a toy. In March last year, Two people died after a man threw a grenade into a bus parking area in Rumbek town of Lagos State. According to the United Nations Mine Action Service, more than 5,000 South Sudanese, including 249 children, have been killed or injured by landmines and exploded ordnance since 2004. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
Unknown number of people died during an attack on a cattle camp in eastern Equatoria State along the Juba-Nimule Road. The attack comes days after the governor of eastern Equatoria State visited the cattle camp to urge cattle keepers to return to their place of origin. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Cattle herders say the attack occurred Sunday morning when an unknown group of armed men attacked the cattle camp. Santo Malwala Cheg, who resided in the cattle camp, says the attackers opened fire and sprayed the camp with bullets. He says they also lobbed rocket-propelled grenades, or RPGs, on residents of the camp.
They have killed 5 children and we have killed 30 people from the attackers who are wearing military uniforms. Where do these people come from? Are they civilians or soldiers? That is what actually happened yesterday.
Officials from Eastern Equatoria State confirmed the attack yesterday on the cattle camp in Magui along the Juba-Nimule Highway. Reached by phone from Turit, Eastern Equatoria State Information Minister Patrick Oting says the attack was carried out by unknown cattle raiders.
We were actually got the information late in the evening yesterday that there was an attack in Magui. A couple of cattle raiders, unknown cattle raiders, went there and they went and attacked, but they were repulsed by the cattle herders and the area.
Oting says several people were killed on both sides and several others injured during the attack. A week ago, Eastern Equatoria State Governor Luis Labung visited some cattle camps in Magui County in an effort to convince cattle keepers who migrated mostly from Jonglei State to return home. His visit followed repeated complaints from farmers native to the area that cattle were destroying their crops. This week, a number of families said they have been displaced by armed cattle keepers in Magui County. One community member who prefers to be identified only as Bosco explains.
What I know is the displacement of the local community by the cattle keepers. You know, when the cattle keepers came, they started disturbing the local community around by denying them access to go for firewood, fetching water. You know, most of the people there depends on the water collected from the streams. And the immediate factor which prompted them to leave the area, it was the shooting of one of the local community within Agoro. And that's why it triggered the movement of the community away from that area of Agoro coming to Magui.
Cattle keeper Mlwala Chek says Sunday's attack on the cattle camp was planned in advance.
This was a coordinated attack. The governor even wanted us to protect ourselves, saying empty groups of people are around us. How did the governor know if this was not a coordinated attack? Where did they get RPGs? It was a coordinated plan to raid our cattle, and our witness is the governor, according to the way he said it.
Information Minister Oting denies Governor Lobong had any prior knowledge of the attack.
So the governor went and he went to two different places whereby he met with the cattle herders, and he actually talked to them for length. And one thing that came out of the meeting with the governor and the cattle herders was that they were there temporarily, but then when the rain starts, they will go back to where they have come from. And also the governor assured them of the dialogue, that there is a need of the dialogue between them and the hosting community. That was some of the things that had happened. But the incident that had happened, we are unaware of what had happened until yesterday in the evening. That's when we had the information that an attack had happened.
Cattle keepers like Malwal say they migrated to eastern Equatoria in search of water and pastures for the animals when devastating floods in 2017 displaced thousands of people from Jonglei State. Malwal says Water levels have reduced in the area, and it is now time to take his cows back home.
We have already agreed to leave when the rainy season starts. We came here to look for pastures, but fighting is not the best way to tell us to leave if that is the plan. Fighting and killing and raiding are not good. We are going to finish ourselves.
Malual says peaceful coexistence among the people of Eastern Equatoria should be encouraged. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, UN's Human Rights Commission is expected to discuss the fighting in Ukraine. Stay tuned for details after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are going to have a busy day, do you get up early?
I wake up the same time I wake up, no matter how busy I want to be. The only time I wake up earlier than expected is when I have production. Most of the times I'm into TV, radio productions, and sometimes you get the call time to be 5 or 4:30.
Psychologically, I do get nervous when I have like a big day ahead of me. So yeah, I have to get ready for that.
Yes, I do. But I do plan before the busy day. And then when I get up early, I make sure I implement the plan.
Yes, I get up early to prepare the day and make sure that I execute everything I'm supposed to do. In fact, it even starts from the previous day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Russia's invasion of Ukraine will be hotly debated during the five-week UN Human Rights Council session that began on Monday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Heads of state and other dignitaries representing more than 140 countries will address the UN Human Rights Council over the next 3 days. Quite unusually, this high-level segment will begin with a consideration of a request from Ukraine to hold an urgent debate on the, quote, situation of human rights in Ukraine stemming from the Russian aggression. The Council's president, Argentinian Ambassador Federico Villegas, told journalists in Geneva that an urgent debate can take place as soon as the 47-member body decides to do so.
One has to make a decision according to the rules of procedure, which is a consensus or a vote with a majority of positive votes over negative votes. We had the most recent, and I'm sure you are very much aware, in 2020, Belarus was an urgent debate, and the killing of George Floyd was also an urgent debate.
Prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth said he hoped the Council would immediately address the issue if war broke out, noting the Council has the capacity to help prevent war crimes.
With respect to Ukraine, I mean, I don't see it's the Council's role to try to stop a war. You know, that's the Security Council. But if war breaks out, the Council is really the leading venue to address how the war is fought. And, you know, I hope it doesn't, you know, play out this way, but if there are large-scale war crimes, then it is the Council's role to spotlight those war crimes with the aim of deterring them.
During the session, the Council will consider more than 100 reports dealing with issues such as torture, forced disappearances, extrajudicial killings, and arbitrary detention. The human rights records of some 50 countries in all regions will be examined. They include Myanmar, North Korea, Syria, Ethiopia, Democratic Republic of the Congo, South Sudan, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Human rights organizations are pressuring UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet to present a long-awaited report on China's incarceration of more than 1 million Uyghurs in internment camps in Xinjiang province. The United States, France, and Lithuania have denounced Beijing's wide-scale repression of Uyghurs as a genocide. China vigorously denies these accusations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on rights issues, Human Rights Watch says older people are often the forgotten victims in Africa's conflict zones. The rights group has issued a report looking at abuses suffered by the elderly in 14 countries, mostly African nations, caught up in conflict, ranging from Mali to Ethiopia to Mozambique. Mohammed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mary Malia is a 68-year-old South Sudanese woman. The mother of five says one evening in July 2016, a rebel group attacked her village in the eastern equatorial state. She says the time these people came, they came to our houses, beat us up, and took everything we had. She says while beating us, they wanted to take me. But one of them asked, "Where do we take this old woman? Let us leave her here." So they left me, she says. After a while, I walked on foot to Uganda without anything on me. The widow now lives in a refugee camp in northern Uganda. Malia's story is all too common in the conflict zones of Africa, where older people often have little defense against gunmen who attack rural villages. A new Human Rights Watch report entitled "No One is Spared" details the situation. Bridget Sleep is a senior researcher on the rights of older people at Human Rights Watch.
We found that time and again, older people were at risk of abuses during armed conflict, including summary executions, arbitrary detention, and rape. The reality of the war is that no one is spared, and that older people remain ignored and invisible victims.
Investigators say both armed groups and the government forces they often fight are responsible for the abuses. Sleep says the attackers of older people often take advantage of their physical weakness and unwillingness to leave their homes.
Older people can be at heightened or particular risk of abuse for a number of reasons. One of them is when they're unable to flee the fighting when it comes to their communities. Some choose to stay to protect their property or to protect their homes. Others are unable to run away to escape the violence, or sometimes they don't have family members who can support them and help them flee.
Even if the elderly avoid physical injury, older people can be left isolated and poor as family members flee and communities under attack disintegrate. Help Age International, an organization that stands for the rights of older people, says older people in conflict zones can suffer severe stress leading to depression and post-traumatic disorders. The group's Africa regional representative, Carol Agengo, says societies cannot forget their seniors when talking about how to cope with conflict.
Older people must be included in the pre-conflict warning signs, in the pre-conflict arrangements. Older people must be included in the discussions so that then their interests are known to the communities and the interests are also known to the warring parties. It is possible that during conflict, the harm that happens to older people could be minimized.
Older people sometimes face difficulty in accessing humanitarian assistance in displacement camps. Human Rights Watch calls on humanitarian agencies to be inclusive of older populations and make sure to meet their needs. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Somalia has once again failed to meet the deadline for completion of its long-delayed elections. The country's National Consultative Assembly, which is chaired by Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein, extended the deadline for completion of parliamentary elections to March 15. The previous deadline was February 25. The U.S. swiftly reacted to this latest delay by imposing visa restrictions on a number of Somali officials, including regional leaders suspected to be subverting the election process. Mohammed Sheikh Noor reports for VOA from Mogadishu.
In a press statement announcing visa restrictions targeting certain unnamed Somalis, the U.S. demanded rapid completion of parliamentary and presidential elections in a transparent and credible manner. According to the U.S. officials, the travel ban aims to promote accountability and punish Somali officials obstructing the election process. Some Somalis have welcomed the move. Hassan Barise, a prominent journalist and former BBC and AP correspondent, who is now running for president, supports the ban.
We appreciate the decision by the United States of America, and we would equally appreciate every other effort which would support the Somalia's process in the elections.
Barise said the consequences of continued delays can create irreversible problems, destroying recent progress. Barise also feels more pressure should be applied by the UN, EU and other international partners to sanction individuals sabotaging the election process. Somali activist Mohamed Adde said even harsher penalties are needed.
It has been overdue for some time. United States of America and the rest of the international community has spent a lot of money to establish a democratic system in this country. A number of Somali politicians seem to be dragging their feet when it comes to have in this country indirect elections.
Adde said that the spoilers need to be named and face legal action. He acknowledged that the electoral process is slow and Somalis are fed up and there is urgent need for drastic action. In Mogadishu, there is widespread consensus about imposing visa restrictions on Somali leaders to prevent them from traveling to the U.S., where a large number of Somali politicians' families reside and sometimes hold dual citizenship. Somalis hope visa restrictions by the U.S. and other foreign countries will prompt local leaders to expedite the electoral process. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA Mogadishu, Somalia.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now end this show with Kledi Muzika and the song Anabarao.
Sani kangu bani mama, mai kilangu chuma. Sani kangu bani mama, mai kilangu chuma. Sani kangu bani baba, mai kilangu chuma. Sani kangu bani baba, mai kilangu chuma. Yamoto munumako, mai kilangu chuma. Yamoto munumako, mai kilangu chuma. Karoto munumako.
We have been listening to Kledi Muzika and the song Ana Barao. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking part to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are out there in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sawa, sibuta kun gebilia, kelinina geni sawa.